I'm delighted now to welcome back to the program Dr. Richard Patton. He is an animal nutritionist, and he has a new book called Ruined by Excess, Perfected by Lack, The Paradox of Pet Nutrition. And he will be speaking and signing books at Garcia Street Books in Santa Fe this Saturday, the 4th of June. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Delighted to be here.
And by the way, that's at 2 o'clock this Saturday. So the title of the book suggests something that I think is easy to kind of lose sight of, which is that both human beings and animals and virtually every other creature evolved with a lack of, they did not have an excess of food. They did not have access to a million different restaurant and supermarket choices and things like that. And as a result, their bodies are really adapted to having too little rather than too much. How does that work in the body of an animal, dog, cat, or even human?
Indeed, the process that happens is that the story begins at the very beginning, 4 billion years ago. And as species evolved and perfected, they were shaped by their environment, and the environment did not add a plenitude of anything, particularly soluble carbohydrates.
What do you mean by soluble carbohydrates?
Basically sugar and starch. The metabolic machinery that we therefore inherited is very capable of dealing with lack, to the point where even a bad meal gets you to the next day successfully. This is part of, it's a deceitful little ploy on the part of nature, if you will. But everybody appreciates that constant wrong diet does lead to problems. But in the interim, the problem can be a long time developing.
There are a bunch of examples in the book about ways that your body adapts to the lack of this or that, whether it be water, vitamins, other kind of nutrients. Give us a few examples of that.
One example would be calcium. If you don't have enough calcium, your body will mobilize bones to keep your blood calcium elevated. Another example is the liver stores vitamin A. Most people have sufficient vitamin A in their liver to last for at least 2 years. And so missing vitamin A for a day or calcium for a month does not lead to a problem in and of itself.
Lacking it in the long run, however, does lead to problems.
Exactly.
What if you are feeding yourself or your dog or your cat very well and they have just the right amount of nutrients, the minimum daily requirement every single day? Does that lead to problems or does that make it work well?
It's kind of an ideal situation if this is the case, and no, it does not lead to problems.
So it's not that they need to be essentially fasting the way they do, like it or not, in nature.
Exactly. But related to this is the concept that it's sometimes lost on people, but in the science of nutrition, enough is plenty. And you could begin this by illustrating the point with water. It's common to see people, particularly in airports, carrying water and swilling water all day long. And if you're lacking water, obviously more water helps. But once you reach the hydration point, the set point, more water doesn't do any good. So too with nutrients. When you've received enough selenium or protein, more does not do any good.
Now, one of the problems that we have, again, in both humans and our animals, is obesity. What in our dogs and cats, for example, are the causes? And there are multiple causes for obesity.
At the outset, you could approach it from the standpoint of a pure physicist and say simply that calories in exceeded calories out. But as we know, it's much more complicated than that. Just about all people understand that there's portion control, there's exercise, and where I tend to emphasize the third leg of the stool, and that is what the composition of what you eat. I liken it to the childhood game of paper, rock, and scissors. where, you know, any strategy can win and any strategy can lose. If you exercise enough, you don't really need to worry much about what you eat, talking just about weight control. If you eat small enough amounts, you don't have to exercise. And what the diet gurus, folks like Dr. Atkins and Barry Sears, would tell you is if you eat the right composition, you don't need to worry about exercise or portion control. And indeed, this has been proven unequivocally in the scientific process. If the Atkins diet, if you eat very little soluble carbohydrate, you can essentially eat as much as you want. And incidentally, the people that did that also had a dramatically improved blood lipid picture. So this same thing pertains for our pets.
And so what kind of, when you feed your cat or your dog, well, let's start with dogs. When you feed your dog a combination, say, of canned food and kibbles, are they getting, and you're getting, you know, you're taking them to the dog park, giving them some exercise. It's not like you're a hunter or a hiker and you're out with them 8 hours a day, but you're giving them sufficient exercise and commercial food. Is that good or not so good?
Let me address the two main points you bring up. First of all, let me address exercise. People who enjoy fox hunting typically follow the hounds for 30 miles. And we know this because the riders wear GPS. We also know that the hounds will usually do twice this distance. So let's say these hounds are doing 50 miles a day. Contrast that with your 20-minute stroll around the park. You haven't begun to tap the dog's ability for exercise. Although I don't mean to imply that, I mean any exercise is good. And the other thing you could look at is the Iditarod sled dog that will do, their equivalent is 30,000 calories a day if they weigh them as much as a man. And so we can see that they're capable of an incredible amount of exercise and invariably, we don't begin to address this issue.
Both examples that you gave are domesticated uses, hunting, fox hunting, and sled dogs. What about in nature? What about wolves and wild dogs?
They tend to take more approach of a forager, and foraging does several things. It keeps you moving.
I bet they don't go 50 miles running a day, though, do they?
Oh, no, but they move constantly. And they're also consuming usually small portions. And you could take an amount of dry kibble that would make your dog fat when you feed it once a day. And if you fed it like five times a day, it would not raise blood sugar to the level where the bad hormones kicked in.
So it's not just the composition of the food they're getting, the amount of calories, but the fact that you feed it once a day and chemical processes are kicked off in your animal.
What we need to avoid, what all mammals need to avoid, is spiking blood sugar, because this brings out insulin. And insulin does two things. It, of course, puts blood sugar into the cells, but the other thing that people don't appreciate is that it then stores blood sugar as fat. And in the process, it completely shuts down the mobilization of fat. So when you're in a positive blood sugar status nutritionally, it's impossible to lose weight.
Very interesting. We're talking to Richard Patton about his new book on pet nutrition. What is the best way to basically think about feeding your, let's just stick with dogs and cats for the moment, there are different cases, because cats eat only animals in the wild, whereas dogs are omnivores.
This is a fair distinction. Cats are considered by just about everybody as what's called obligate carnivores. It's much easier to sell my approach to things to a veterinarian, because everyone kind of by default admits that the cat's an obligate carnivore. The sell is a lot more difficult with dogs. What the dog's metabolic machinery is adapted to thrive on is about 10% soluble carbohydrate.
Starch and sugar.
This is what you encounter if you turn yourself loose in the wilderness and subsist on what you can find to eat. admittedly, a patch of blueberries is going to be higher in sugar, but they're also 85% water. So by the time you're full, you really haven't consumed much sugar. Meat, fish, tender shoots of plants, insects, all these things that you might eat in a survival mode provide no soluble carbohydrate. So this brings us to the point that you brought up a little bit ago, and that is, well, what do you feed? It is impossible to make a dry, expanded pet food, dog food, we'll say, without the use of soluble carbohydrate.
What do you mean by expanded?
The kibble that you buy in the grocery store. It is just like bread. It's been cooked. The dough rises, and the property of starch is that when it's cooled in the state, it stays that way, expanded. But you can't get this effect in dry kibble dog food unless it is too high in soluble carbohydrate.
So basically all kibbles are non-ideal for your dog?
Correct.
Those super supposedly healthy ones that you get for more money in the back part of the store?
I'm not going to suggest that someone's marketing a harmful diet, but I will say that 40% soluble carbohydrate every day leads to a shortened life in greater sickness. And these companies are all trying to lower soluble carbohydrate. Some of them have it down to, they claim 22%. When you look at it carefully, it's 28. Well, this is an improvement over 40, but it needs to go lower still.
So what do you feed your dogs?
A combination. You're driven in many cases by economics. If you've got several large dogs, you can't afford to feed them an expensive diet, fresh or raw. And so, to whatever extent you can reduce the kibble with canned or frozen or raw, this is good. So our big dogs get some kibble and some raw.
And what kind of raw food do you give them?
You have many options. A really good one is chicken necks and backs. They don't cause the problem of bones stabbing the GI tract, because the vertebrae all break up easily, and the dogs particularly enjoy them. And in the process, these vertebrae in small bones provide calcium and phosphorus of an ideal type and ratio.
And it's better to serve them to the dogs raw than cooked?
Cooking slightly diminishes nutrition, but it also slightly improves the microbiological picture.
It improves it?
It kills bacteria.
So they're less likely to suffer from Lord knows what kind of gastrointestinal things if you cook your chicken necks and backs?
I think that this is a... I mentioned it because some people may be concerned. Obviously, the regulatory people are quite concerned about raw pet food going into a human kitchen. But from the standpoint of the health of the dog, I actually think that canned food, which is sterile, is a detriment, because it provides no bacteria. Going back to evolution, we've evolved to deal with an incredible bacterial load. 40% of our immune capability is in our gut. And you can cite many instances where things eat what to us are abominable diets in the wild, and they suffer no ill effect. You begin with the vulture. But even, the feral dog will eat roadkill, and they thrive just fine. And so I'm a proponent of raw diets.
There are some examples in your book which I find fascinating. One was a story of these monkeys who were doing very badly in a zoo, and basically, just by mistake, the zookeeper started doing things that allowed the monkeys to behave more like monkeys, and just the fact of being able to behave in their natural state made their coats get better after your treatments didn't work.
My favorite fail-safe tricks did not restore those coats. And the keeper, by chance, forgot the peanuts one day, and he ran down through the exhibit tossing peanuts into the hay. And the monkeys spent all day looking for the peanuts, even long after they'd found them all. And their hair coats started improving immediately.
And you were able to make that connection, that it was simply acting like monkeys.
Unequivocally, and it was all part of my education as I go along. And what a big part behavior can play in nutrition.
And what's the corresponding thing for dogs?
That's a good question. I think you can take just about any hair coat problem, probably has a behavior component. Many animals, many pets present with an allergy. So there are people that would have you buy a hypoallergenic diet. What no one has considered till this point is that the allergy is probably to soluble carbohydrate, and that if the hypoallergenic diet isn't also low in soluble carbohydrate, the dog will struggle. I had a client that for many years sold a raw meat-based diet with the condition that if it didn't fix a skin condition, they'd refund money. They never had to refund money. And it's not that their diet was magic, it was that it contained no soluble carbohydrate, no starch and sugar.
Richard Patton is an animal nutritionist, and he's the author of the new book, Ruined by Excess, Perfected by Lack, The Paradox of Pet Nutrition, published by the University of Nottingham Press, and he will be at Garcia Street Books this Saturday, the 4th of June, at 2 in the afternoon. Thanks so much for being with us.
Pleasure. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're streaming live on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can find us at facebook.com/radiocafe, and my email address is radiocafe@ksfr.org. Stay tuned for the BBC, then local news, then jazz.